Let's say Mother's opening prayer. Oh, Heavenly Father.
Oh, Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
Divine Mother.
Beloved Jesus Christ.
Beloved Jesus Christ.
Blessed Master.
Blessed Master.
Dearest Mother.
Dearest Mother.
Beloved David.
Beloved David.
Saints and sages of all religions.
Saints and sages of all religions.
I bow to all of you.
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles.
Free my life from all obstacles.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Mind thy temple.
Make my
mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only king.
Be thou the only king.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Master always referred to Babaji as Babaji Krishna. Oftentimes, the Christ was mentioned first too. And then the chosen conduit for the Kriya were the teachings of this lineage through the Hari Mahasya. And then Sri Yukteswar, one of the many disciples of the great Mahasya. And Master Sri Yukteswar had a few disciples, and Master was one of them, who had many, many disciples. One of them was Mother. His mother passed it on to David. And thank you, Graham, for letting us all meet here. So I'm going to read some things, just generally how Mother did it. She often talked a little bit beforehand. But I think what's on my mind myself is how grateful I am to Master. And what we're going to read is from him. These are his formulations and ways of speaking and doing this great teaching. And I'm going to start with a letter from David. You know, I'm not sure when this was, but maybe the context will tell us. I think it's 96. Dear friends, as we approach this season, the focus of our attention is often on the external world. I see, he's referring back to the Kriya Refresher. Sorry about that. I would also extend an invitation to you in mindfulness of the inner, the birth of our own Christ consciousness right within ourselves. This birth of the Christ seed within marks the beginning of our final mile toward God. This definite event is truly worthy of reverential celebration. The Kriya Refresher stands out in my mind as one of the year's highlights. So this would have been, 1995. I recall with wonder the presence of God and gurus. Thank you to all who joined in this time. After a very difficult 2 years of the dark night of my soul, I've emerged with an even greater awareness of God's presence. Also, the desire to serve and love God is stronger than ever. As I have spoken to different groups of souls and worked spiritually with individuals, I have been conscious of God's and Guru's presence to such a degree that I feel that I am just a witness, and the feeling of God's power and peace permeates me. These experiences have been a demonstration to me that the greatest happiness in the world is in serving and loving God in all whom we meet. This does not mean that my path this last year has been strewn with rose petals, far from it. But even with the sharp thorns, God has been there to comfort And so this work for Mother and Master in which we all share continues. We meet every day, every Sunday evening, alternating between Larry and Kate Kohler's home and Peter and Laura Schultz's home. These wonderful souls have opened their homes and their hearts for all to come and share in the spiritual adventure. Pat and Jan Downey are having services in their home in Victoria. Phyllis Victory has opened her home for services in Vancouver, and I have been giving talks there monthly. We have no organization, we do not advertise, and we do not charge for services. Those who come are brought by someone else, and each gives according to how God directs them. Many have offered their services to help in this work, and I am grateful. In the spirit of Lahiri Mahasaya, we are allowing the fragrance of God to move and direct this work and attract those whom it will. And so to you, my beloved in God, may the blessings of this season be a birth of the continual realization of your oneness with God. My love always, Yogeshwara David A. Hickenbottom. So Mother's prayer is that, make my mind thy temple, make my heart thy altar. And Master, saying that the spine is the altar is really interesting, isn't it? The heart is the center, at the middle of the body. And Mother felt strongly that that was where the altar for God in the body is. I find it interesting that Master says the whole spine. It's definitely true that the spine, when you focus on it, can be the source of healing and bliss and surprising feelings that seem to bring stability and I won't say faith so much as knowledge that you stand on, like faith. It's a very strange thing to stand and to feel your body all around and to realize that this is where the soul resides for this incarnation. The soul can leave the body for sure, but it is generally taught not to do that. Now, masters have their own reasons for doing this, but they teach us to stay focused on the body, stay focused on all of the lessons we are to learn. Not get involved in powers, astral projection, all of these kinds of things. But it is amazing to take note of how the very self, your very self, is centered in this body. And it is vertical in the spine. You can feel it. You can feel that it goes more strongly there than your feet or your arms. Yet, as David used to talk about, you have an electrical field around you that comes out of each part of your body. But that the center point, the center line, is the spine. And then within the human body is the notion of the seventh chakra. And more than that, it is the sign of attainment, of not having to be in the body for one thing, having used up all of the karmic requirements. And people who live in that realm set easily on the body, set easily on the earth, and they only operate through the body to the extent of benefiting other people and to show the way. I know I talk a lot about my first experiences with Mother, but this guru-disciple relationship and that is part of the initiation, is really important because it is the means by which a person can be stabilized. This path is very difficult in some respects, that if you don't have a good teacher, that if you don't have a lineage that helps support that teacher. Now, people who don't know about Mother so much, but certainly David talked about the idea that he stood out, he stood forward and projected the idea that he was a teacher who could teach Kriya and could play the role of guru to others. And he resolved it very easily. Everything comes back to Mother. If he wasn't fully realized, is that the important thing? Or is it the lineage? Is it that which proceeds? David knew Mother. That knowledge is the connection to this lineage. And so if the person giving the technique and the guru isn't fully realized, it's not so important as it is that thread that connects. These are not things you can rationalize. You cannot say, who's the guru, who's the disciple? It's not something that can be discerned other than what God gives. He decides that. He is the guru. Ultimately, Babaji Lahir Mahasaya, at that level, God is the true source of all things that they do. So if they walk in the room, we know they're fully realized. Yes, we know they are fully realized in their knowledge of God. Master used to have people teach Kriya and stand as a guru preceptor. Yet they were all taught that Master was their guru while Master was alive. And that continued afterwards. So it clearly can be this way. I maintain that when Mother became a teacher under Master, that she chose to let that knowledge be given to her disciples, that she was their guru. This is a huge, huge gift. And it is not lightly given. She could easily have done what others have done and let Master be the focus. But she knew her own relationship with Master was really something special, and that being that, playing that role for others, it happened to her naturally. People attracted to her. People flocked to her. Even though she'd been through some very difficult times. So I don't know, other than to rely upon the lineage that we have here. It's nice, it's important to put aside all notions of doubt associated with that and to let that which comes from God come from God and to acknowledge that. And not worry. Look, we all say, David was my guru, Mother was my guru. And that's an important thing. We don't really ultimately know exactly what's going on here until you get fully realized. Anandamayi Ma used to have darshan, or used to have initiation given by her mother to disciples. She didn't do it herself. There are so many different aspects to this, but to depend upon the person giving the instruction is necessary. And that relationship, David felt very strongly too, that is taking the role of the guru is a huge step forward, but it is also a huge benefit to disciples. And you have to stand on that which you are given. I've not known for sure, and it doesn't, just doesn't come clearly, whether I was with Master in previous lifetimes. I feel strongly that I was. But what is the Guru in this lifetime associated with that same lineage? I've always thought this is so odd. It's not a doubt. It is a trying to understand the relationship. I knew everything that I had spiritually came from Mother. She changed so much of my life. So again, what if you attain full realization in one lifetime and you have another guru in another lifetime? This thread, this legitimate aspect of the lineage comes from God down through many souls sometimes. And that's the focus that ultimately lets you stand on your own to know God directly. Mother said, don't deal with Mr. In Between. This is what the Guru does, teaches you to stand on your own. Something that was said about Mother when she was stating that she was a guru to someone or accepting the notion that she was, that she would be blocking Master's life. And yet, every single thing in Master's life was to bring fully realized people into the world, to help them get that, and to stand on their own. Did Master block Sri Yukteswar's life? It's a silly point. But not to say there aren't really tough and real tests that go on with this whole transfer. This is going to happen many more times with Mother lineage. And where all the people who knew Mother personally are gone. And those who came in succession. This is why the focus on God. The Mother, you know, it's interesting. The Mother talked a lot about her own experiences. And I loved it when she talked about Master. But she didn't depend on that strictly. She depended on that which she knew from God herself. I found that really, really thrilling. That she taught from that perspective. And I never really had a strong feeling for Christianity after I left the seminary. About 6 months, maybe a year later, I left the church. But so the Christian thing for me wasn't that important at that time. And as I came into the Eastern teachings through Master's book, Autobiography, I started as an atheist and ended as a theist. I slowly grew to really love Jesus and to understand that this is the universal teachings that we're talking here about. And that Jesus and Krishna, all of these souls, these are great avatars, there's no doubt. But I didn't find that I really loved the Christian aspect that Mother brought to the story. And I find that I want to do more of this, putting together pictures of all the times Master wore a cross. And all the times Mother wore a cross in India. Here she is mixing with Eastern teachers and Eastern disciples and people steeped in that, forcing that universal notion into the open. If you could, some people could look at Mother and just in India and just stay away from her. She's obviously a Christian, or she's got that too strongly. There's some opposition. But the universal person can see it. And here's our beloved Master, with many pictures of a pin of the cross on him. And what that meant to the Americans, of course, was wonderful, and Westerners. It really bonded them. But he was doing this, he was unafraid. He knew what the universal aspect of these teachings is. So I talk a lot about The Chosen, the movie, and its depiction of Jesus as a regular person, a fairly regular person. He's really quite wonderfully portrayed there, but that you could have normal conversations with him. I talk about normal things. It's a thrilling idea. Yet my first 2 or 3 years with Mother, I couldn't talk to her hardly. I was so in awe of her. I was so, I don't want to say intimidated, because she was never like that, but I was inwardly felt completely unworthy to operate on her. And also, I was feeling so much energy in her presence. It took away all other ideas. I couldn't think of questions many times that I had before, and many people talked about this. So those times I was so set up to accept a guru with Master's book. And when I met Mother, the fact that she was a woman made absolutely no difference whatsoever. I wanted to learn Kriya, and I wanted to learn to know God in this, from this kind of path and this lineage. I said a strange thing to David maybe 2 or 3 years after being with Mother, that what surprised me the most about being with Mother was that in being with the group and learning the things that I was learning, that as much as I wanted to learn the Kriya Yoga technique, and I think it is a powerful technique, it's for certain people the most effective way of learning to meditate and to know God. It is a strange thing that it has a mechanical, it has a body-oriented aspect to it, but it does really work. But still, I must say that what I realized in a shock about 6 months or a year or two with Mother was that what I really, really had was a guru. I really had touched, I had access to this tremendously powerful thing that went right into my heart and right into my spine. It made my mind not function in a normal way. Being in her presence, listening to her talk. I was just shocked, and I know many, many other people felt this way too. So the guru-disciple relationship is really something to treasure and to understand in the correct way. And so Jules offered, I asked her to talk about her relationship with David. She told me that she talked about, David had you and asked you to talk about it at one of the Kriyas. I'm so interested and enthralled with that idea that you must do a reprise of that. If you don't mind. Because you got caught, you got hit. Yeah. Bit, or as Peter used to say, bit hard.
So I met David working with him. And within about 3 weeks of knowing him in that capacity, I knew that what I had been searching for was what he had. And I couldn't pinpoint what that meant. I just knew that he had something and it's what I wanted. And over the next 7 years, we were close friends and spoke about everything under the sun and argued about things and teased each other about things and went through his dark night.
So can I ask a question though before you go there?
Yeah.
Because I know you witnessed all of that too. So were you in the same office physically in the desk next to each other or in adjacent offices?
No, we were,
That's a special.
And special for a year, 3 days a week, it was just the two of us down in Auburn.
God really arranged it.
Yeah. It's, well, I, I got a transfer so that that would that was within 3 months of knowing him. And he seemed delighted with the idea. So that was, and so we spent many, many, many hours when we should have been working. Although we were both excellent employees, we were able to squeeze a lot of time about what the meaning of life was, what we're here for, why the atoms start to get loose when I'm talking to him.
So did you talk about God, though?
We talked about God. He would say God, and I did not like the word God. So it was many years before I would say God. It was, I think, after Kriya, before I started to actually use the term God.
David
always, from the time I knew him, he always referred to God as God. And he said, we need to take God's good name back. Other people, you know, there's been misuse of the term God. And so we have to use it correctly to, so it becomes the word that it's meant to be. And so I was daily witness to the dark night of the soul, 5 days a week, sometimes six, and watched him go through that and stay completely committed to God, even though there was absolutely no experience of God. And that was what made it so painful, was that he knew God was there and he couldn't access it. And so that was very, very painful to watch, because I knew it was such a loss and such a grieving time. But he was completely magnetic in that time toward the outward world. Everybody wanted to be around him in the material world, which is perhaps a temptation. I don't know.
It happened to Mother Teresa too, very similar.
Yeah. And so after 7 years of not going there with him, as far as getting into the nitty gritty of what his spiritual group was about and what Mother was about, I decided that, because I was afraid that if I thought what he believed was too off the wall or I couldn't buy into it, that it would ruin our relationship. And so I stayed away, and then it just came to a head that I felt like I couldn't stay away anymore. And that was when he hosted his first little meditation, and there was just about 6 or 7 of us there. And I had the experience of the sitting for meditation, that very dramatic experience in that first meditation. And he hadn't given me any meditation directions or anything prior to that. We had never done any of that. And then from there, as Peter says, I was fully bit. And to know what he has done for all of us, those who are Mother's devotees and those who are David's devotees, and those who are David's devotees that weren't his devotees officially before. But he, you know, he's been waiting in the wings for them to come to this path. And to know what it cost him. And I remember him having given me some directions and not following through on them, and then writing him a a letter about how sorry I was that I hurt him and that I disappointed him. And his immediate response was, how could you hurt me or disappoint me? That would be if I was in this for myself. I'm only in this for you to get your realization. My only reason for this is for you to get your realization. I'm only hurt because I know what it's costing you. And that's what the guru does for us. They lay out the red carpet that we may follow them, through the open door that they present us. A song, a Christian hymn song that's been going through my head lately is, come follow me and I will give you rest. Be not afraid. I go before you always. Come follow me and I will give you rest. But we can't quit. We have to keep following. So we're through the door, celebrating. David never disappointed, never let me down once. Even the people that I babysat for that barely knew my spiritual path when David left the body, they said, oh, we know how important he was to you. And I said, I'm everything I am that you love because of him. Guru can take away all the chaff, leave only the wheat. Which isn't so good when you're seated at it. So I encourage you all to join this merry band led by such amazing and delightful and heroic gurus. They're doing nothing but cheering us on. Other image that came to me when I thought about sharing tonight was the last group kriya that David gave that I assisted him with, and everyone had gone upstairs after the initiation, and I sat with him downstairs at the house. And then he pronounced to me and indicated that it was time for me to go. And I could tell that the masters were filling the room and that my vibration was getting in the way. So it was time for the children to go to bed. It was just so uplifted and expanded. And, you know, he was joined in delight. All they want for us is for us to join them where they are. I love the story that David tells about feeling like the masters must be looking down at him, some such puny and unlovely characteristics and making so many mistakes, and he was drawn up into this vision, and that they're looking at him with so much understanding, because they had walked through everything that he was walking through and understood where it led. The other thing to remember is that there's no place for them to go. Time and space is just made for us puny little humans, and for the masters, they're just freed from being confined to this little vial. So they're everywhere around. Being reminded to remind ourselves about discipline and how important it is. And that when there's someone that we love and respect, and they ask for us to discipline ourselves, that we follow through with that. Because we know it's out of love.
Keith and I were listening to one of the mother's talks on the way up here. The mystery of life, the first one, is around Kriya of 76, which we were both at. Mother used to tell these incredible stories. I don't know where she got them. And that's the talk where she talks about the tea party with me, myself, and I. So funny. It's hard to measure up to what she wants. But you're right that this is their only interest. It's like they want to be critical. They want the best only. David often said that to me, but they're not up there shaking their heads. They're pushing for us to get the highest understanding. Like a parent would feel about a child. You can be critical of the child, but you can still, you can do help with corrective things. And you just live them, let them live and learn their lessons themselves too. Well, almost all of you have taken Kriya. So if anybody here has something to add to the story of what, especially what we read about Kriya, but also the guru disciple relationship, please feel free to do so. And give some analysis, if you would, of what Kriya has done, problems you've had, or delights, or advantages, or benefits. Puts you on the spot, doesn't it? Mm-hmm.
I will say something.
Okay.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Yeah. I actually know without a doubt I would not be alive if it wasn't for the guru disciple relationship and the line of masters. After I took Kriya, and it hadn't been very long because my babies were still really young. I was so depressed. I just said, okay, that's it. I can't live anymore. And had fully planned on doing away with myself. And the masters, all of them, were in a circle around me and just saying, I love you. You know, we love you. You'll make it. And that was the, you know, it wasn't just mother. It was the whole line. And that was a big deal for me. And so anytime going on in the future of that, then it was like every time I would get depressed or something, I'm like, okay, I have that very strong image burned into my soul that they are there for me. And, yeah, and I do have a word of warning for people who are just starting it. Don't neglect the Kriya because it will lead you to a very dark place for a while if you do. Been there, done that. So it's good to keep going even when it doesn't feel like you want to or anything. And that's my contribution.
That's a wonderful image, Charlie. Really wonderful.
Yeah, it's a lifesaver.
Yeah. Well, these are where the stories of angels come from too, aren't they? Because how many people have not had this notion of a guru in their life? Maybe a priest or a minister or in the East also. But what else can you, how else can you describe some of these kinds of images like this of the great masters surrounding you? It's angelic, isn't it? We just happen to know our masters, our angels. At least we know their names.
That's a good point, Larry.
That angels.
Angels personally.
Yeah.
Even the physical exercise of stretching just feels so wonderful. I mean, yoga is partly a physical thing too.
People do these yoga asanas and practices spontaneously, not having been taught. Mm-hmm. These are natural things for the body, maybe from other lifetimes too, of course. But also just how do these first ideas come from? It comes from someone's feeling their body and getting an understanding how it works and what it is.
Intuitively.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When I was reading this lesson today, this morning, something that hadn't struck me before so clearly that Master was talking about is magnetizing the spine with the Kriya breath. And in doing that, when we put the focus there, then without trying, all the senses and the sensory inputs retreat to the spine. Mm-hmm. And how that's just a natural occurrence then. You're not trying to relax. You're not trying to let go of anxiety. You're not trying to stop thinking. You just focus on the spine and everything naturally flows to that, back into that space. And that's been my experience, but I hadn't pinpointed it like that before.
Master was speaking from such a position of authority, he'd had so many experiences, even as a young man. He knew so much about this from personal and personal practice and actual experience.
So when the spine gets magnetized like that, we don't have to work at it anymore. We don't have to work at focusing the meditation so much.
It takes you over.
Yeah.
And that's your physical spine or like an astral spine?
Go ahead, Larry.
You can't tell the difference.
Yeah.
It all becomes the same. We think of the nervous system as being something that pulses and creates the notion of a soul or a self. But it's really responding. It's just, this feeling physical is a symptomatic effect of what's going on in the astral. So you can't separate the two. The astral world is more like, the astral body is more like our physical body. It's the pattern from which this body was built. But electrical impulses to the nervous system, all of that, the source of all of that is the astral. And the astral first. You can feel it in the room right now. I can feel David very strongly. There is a current when we talk this way. There, what did Jesus say? Where two or more are gathered together. This is a special. It's funny, you know, my own life, I've always had difficulty, especially in the early days, of meditating with other people because my own body is causing trouble and I'm hearing noises and movements. So I like to meditate by myself. But there is something that occurs in a group that's different than the heights of meditation by yourself. And it has this, it is this transferable, this contagious, shareable energy that comes between, amongst all of us. There am I in the midst. That's so thrilling to think of.
We're feeling it too.
Yeah. It's not dependent on space, is it?
No.
I'd just like to share, if you're not feeling it, I would encourage you to do the 20 part where you tense your entire body, hold it for 10 seconds, and then release. And that'll help open that door if anybody's feeling not in that current. If you're feeling it, don't do that.
Interesting.
It really makes the medulla open really naturally. I remember being in the room with David saying something like that, and I was not feeling anything at all. So,
I was just going to say that oftentimes I'm concentrating so much on doing the perfect Kriya, and I, you know, I'll forget. It's like waves. You know, you really concentrate. I have to do this right. And then, anyways, it's like waves.
It is. That's a good description, yeah.
And then after, you know, sitting for the hour, oftentimes you'll feel like nothing happened, but I'll surprise myself because I'll go in the kitchen and I have all this joy and I think, where did the joy come from? You know, because it's felt like a struggle and yet there's joy. It's nice.
It's not important to have that bliss in meditation. It's important to do the work. And then you notice the proof's in the pudding, right?
It becomes very much part of you.
Yeah.
I know when Mother first gave us Kriya, I didn't really understand much about it for many, many years. Just we do it anyways, you know. And then when David gave us Kriya again, it became so much more part of your life that one can't imagine, or I can't imagine not having it in my life right now, because it does bring me the joy and it centers you. It's a wonderful way to start and end your day.
I would encourage you, if you, for those who are practicing Kriya, if you aren't feeling the joy of Kriya, if you aren't, if it's feeling like just another chore, go back to just the original 14 Kriya breaths and do them with the deepest sense of commitment. And the word that's coming to me is compassion for yourself. And then bask in the afterglow.
Something David shared in our Kriya initiation in 2014 was that the Kriya is this vehicle that brings you up to a high point. And once you're there, the meditation afterwards is like getting out of the car to look at the view. You've arrived, get out, look around. Why would you just turn around and go back if you went all that way to get there? And yet that is what a challenge in Kriya for me is, okay, don't go back to the mundane thoughts about what my day is. Stay in this and, as you said, bask in the afterglow. And doing so is so worthwhile. I just hear David's voice saying, you've come all this way. Get out of the car. Look around.
Masters the metaphor for it is creating a beautiful gourmet meal and then not bothering to sit down and eat it.
Well, of course, the proper practice is that you fall right into that higher state, because it leads you to that. But it is hard to do Kriya breaths correctly. And what Judy was saying about coming in waves is very true. To keep the concentration there. But if it is the time, some of the times that you do it, you feel the ease with which you slip into a meditative state. Because it is a preparation. And so there's no thought that you wouldn't do it. Those are the best times.
Yeah.
We can live in great ecstasy and great feeling of love when you get into these states. It has an aspect of understanding in the mental sense. You understand things, people that bother you or things that bother you. You can actually understand them. But also you feel this tremendous heart connection with all of the world. The world's exactly the way it's supposed to be. You know that you've attained some state, some great understanding, and you can see that world that way and to love the world rather than just see the world in a way that intellectually we think, okay, it's the way God wants it. It's not what Papa means by that. It's a tremendous love and understanding of what existence is. Not existence in God so much, because it's only God, it's all there is. So let's try and stay focused on Kriya, regardless of outside. You know, for me, these are times to get together like this. These are natural, positive things that really benefit us all. And it's better to just keep the holy time here in mind, to keep it focused while doing natural, normal things, interacting with other people, enjoying them. And resting, rather than having somebody tell you what to do, resting in the idea that you're happy with the way that it is, whatever comes about. Now, negative behavior, of course, I'm not saying we put up with anything like that or expect it, or I think we can bull our way through such things. But we're not likely to see any of that tomorrow or today.
Can you remind me what to bring tomorrow? Tomorrow, for those who are attending in person, and for those who aren't attending, as part of the Kriya ceremony, we make an offering of flowers, of fruit, and of money. One of the things we sent says what the reason is for those. I like the idea that you have to work very hard to not smell the flowers, but you should choose some that are your favorite. Even the fragrance is offered up to God. And then also that we should dress for a sacred sacrament tomorrow. So.
But be comfortable.
But be comfortable.
Yes.
We come a little early and we'll be waiting to enter the space, so just be prepared that Reverend Larry will be in the space and I'll be the sergeant at arms, making sure that he's ready to work.
Say Mother's closing prayer. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother,
I feel the wonder and the beauty
of Thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for Thee. I kneel in adoration at Thy feet. And surrender myself to Thee. I feel the power of Thy perfection. Surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence. Are radiant with Thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss. Of my communion with Thee. I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Peace. Bliss.
Amen.